As we approach Easter, we've been going back to a series that took us through many, many weeks in 2018 as we looked at the ways of Jesus through the book of John. And went chapter by chapter and kind of story by story, investigating the heart of God, the ways of Jesus through the amazing gospel of John. Last week, we were in John chapter 18 and the betrayal of Jesus, and we're going to continue with that towards the end of chapter 18 and then beginning of chapter 19 today. Dozens and dozens of times throughout the entire New Testament, Jesus is referred to as the King. Over and over again. And there's a particular word that was chosen in the Greek language that depicted that in the New Testament. It's the word basileus. And basileus means the leader of the people, commander, the lord of the land, the king. And Jesus is referred to over and over again as the king. And that same word was used to describe like King David, King Herod. Make no mistake, Jesus was a king. Let me just give you a few examples throughout the New Testament, from the beginning to the end of the New Testament, that reference that. In Luke, when Luke describes the angel coming to Mary to announce that she's going to be giving birth to Jesus, Luke captures this in chapter 1, says, "You shall call his name Jesus, and the Lord God will give to him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end." And then in Matthew captures the when the wise men came after Jesus was born. And you know what the question was that they asked? Where is the newborn King of the Jews? I love the way the Apostle Paul wrote to his spiritual son Timothy about King Jesus. And in chapter 1 of 1 Timothy, Paul writes and says, "All honor and glory to God forever and ever. He is the eternal King, the unseen one who never dies. He alone is God." Woo! And then the very last book of the Old Testament, or the New Testament, Revelation. Several times in Revelation, John is writing this revealed work of God to him. And several times he refers to Jesus being the king. But I love this in Revelation chapter 11, verse 15, when he says this, "The world has now become the kingdom of our Lord and of his Christ, and he will reign forever and ever." All through the New Testament, we see this concept, this idea that Jesus is the King. Now listen, we know that Jesus came mildly. He came with meekness. He came with gentleness, not with this sword to conquer. He came in a different way. He's a different kind of a king. But make no mistake, Jesus is the King of Kings. He came to be the Lord of all. Every bit of creation is under his rule and his reign, including you and me. So when we finished last week's message in John chapter 18, we kind of left Jesus right in the middle of his mock trial. I mean, it was a mock trial. Now, in the days of Jesus in Israel, there were real trials with real judges, real witnesses, and there was even laws that would govern those situations. This was not one of those trials. This was something very different because the Jewish religious leaders of the day, they hated Jesus. And so they had conspired to have this king to be executed. And they weren't going to let anything get in their way, like those little nasty things like justice and the law. They weren't going to let those things stop their plan. So they conspired to kill Jesus. And that's what we're in the middle of this story. And so last week we talked about Jesus being taken to the high priests. And they'd interrogated Jesus. And then they brought him to Pilate, who was the Roman governor of the region. And this entire conversation that we're going to reflect on today on Palm Sunday is about Pilate wrestling with this concept of, could he really be like the king? Is he really the king? We start off in John chapter 18 in verse 29. And the religious leaders had brought Jesus, it said, to the courtyard of Pilate. They wouldn't go in. They wouldn't go in because they didn't want to be defiled. And we talked about the hypocrisy. You know, they were worried more about the religious customs than the fact that they were murderers. But so they bring, you know, they go into the courtyard, have this conversation. And Pilate, it says, went outside to them and said, what accusation do you bring against this man? And they answered him, if this man were not doing evil, we would not have delivered him over to you. Just pause right there for a moment. Listen, you can hear the animosity between Pilate and these religious leaders. These religious leaders would not have brought Jesus to Pilate because, well, as a matter of fact, they hated Pilate. I want you to think about something. This all happened during Passover. What did Passover celebrate for the Jewish people? Their exodus from the Egyptians who had been their masters, their lords. They had been slaves in Egypt. Passover celebrated the miraculous work of God to redeem and release them from slavery. But now here they were again in their own land, the land of Israel, but they were once again an occupied people. Rome was over them and had rulership over them. And this guy, Pilate, represented the oppression that they were under. Do you think they wanted to have anything to do with Pilate? Absolutely not. And here it was, Passover, celebrating their freedom from oppression. And they're going to the one guy who represents this oppression that they're now under again, under Roman rule. And so you can kind of hear the tension. What accusation are you bringing against this man? Well, if this man were not doing evil, do you think we would have brought him to you? So Pilate says, take him yourselves and judge him by your own law. The Jews said to him, it is not lawful for us to put anyone to death. But this was actually to fulfill the word that Jesus had spoken to show by what kind of death he was going to die. See, when the Jewish leaders said, hey, we can't execute anyone, you know, that's up to you. That was only technically true. They were not allowed to crucify anyone. But the fact is they did kill people. Because when you get to the book of Acts, we find out really early on that there was a guy named Stephen. And they didn't like what Stephen was saying about Jesus and about them. So what did they do? They stoned him. Stoning was something that did happen. We see it over and over again throughout the New Testament. We see that Paul said, man, they attempted to stone me. And typically what would happen in a stoning is they would take the person that they were going to kill, throw them off some high place, and then just hurl rocks on them until they were dead. Now, guess what? That would break some bones, you think? bones would be broken, skulls would be crushed, both from being tossed off someplace high, but also having rocks hurled at you, bones are broken. But here's what it says. When it says that this was to fulfill the word that Jesus had spoken to show by what kind of death he was going to die, it had been prophesied through the Old Testament that the Messiah was not going to have a bone broken, but he would be pierced for our sin. He would be pierced. Well, the Jews could not execute him that way, and little did they know, but by bringing him to Pilate, they were actually fulfilling prophecy that had been spoken many, many years before about the death of the Messiah. So we get to verse 33. So Pilate enters his headquarters again. He leaves the courtyard. He goes and finds Jesus and says this, "Are you the king of the Jews?" See, Pilate has this private interview with Jesus when he realizes, well, the Jews, they wouldn't want to be bringing anybody to me, especially during the Passover. He knew that he was hated by them. But there was something strange about this case. In fact, in the Gospel of Luke, Luke records different parts of this conversation that were going on between the Jewish leaders and Pilate. And in Luke 23, verse 2, we read three accusations that the religious leaders brought against Jesus. This is what they said. Watch these three. They began to accuse him, saying, "We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar and saying that he himself is Christ, a king." So Pilate is like kind of going through this list of three accusations. Okay, he's misleading our nation. Well, there are a lot of people spreading fake news around and misleading people, so I don't know if I really care so much about that. Then he gets to this next one about forbidding people to pay taxes to Caesar. Well, that's a little bit more serious. This now impedes against Rome. So maybe there's some sort of a, insurrection, some little revolution thing that's happening right here. Might need to investigate that. But I really think it's this third one that actually stood out to Pilate. Because it's the one he goes back to Jesus and talks to Jesus about. And that was this accusation that he actually is claiming that he is the Christ. That word Christ means the anointed one. That he actually is claiming to be a king. So Pilate begins this conversation with Jesus by asking, "Are you the king of the Jews?" It is that very thing, the kingship, the lordship of Jesus, that is what is at the very heart of this conversation. And I believe that it is one of the absolute key things that you and I have to wrestle with as well. Pilate wrestled with this, and the conversation does not end very well, either for Pilate or for Jesus, because Pilate sends him off to his crucifixion. But we know that this was God's plan all along, Jesus dying for us. At the end of our gathering, we're going to actually celebrate his work on the cross by coming to the table of communion together. There was a plan that God was enacting, but Pilate wrestled with this kingship of Jesus, and he missed it. And we don't want to miss it. So let's listen to this story. Verse 34. Jesus answers this question, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he answers and says, "Do you say this of your own accord? Or did others say it about me?" And Pilate answers, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done?" See, Pilate sarcastically replies with this question. Do you think I'm a Jew? I'm a Roman, bro. Even if you did claim to be a king, you wouldn't be my king. I only have one king. His name is Caesar. I'm only investigating this claim to see if you're some kind of revolutionary, some sort of troublemaker that could stir things up here in this land that I'm governing. And you must have done something to have you brought to my attention. So what have you done? Verse 36, Jesus answers, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from this world. So Jesus claims that position of kingship, lordship, but not the way that Pilate had been imagining. Jesus replied that Rome did not need to fear a political rebellion. He wasn't that kind of leader. He was not that kind of king. It's a heavenly kingdom that Jesus is over, one that is not man-made. So it doesn't grow through rebellion or revolution. It grows through surrendering our hearts to the true king. And at this point in the story, as we go on, you're going to begin to hear, I believe, the wheels in Pilate's brain starting to grind. He's starting to grind the gears. You're like, what? What are you saying? What are you talking about? A spiritual kingdom? You're talking about God? Because in verse 37, we read, then Pilate said to him, so, you are a king? And Jesus answered, you say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born. And for this purpose I have come into the world. To bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. And we hear Jesus echoing what we've seen all through the book of John. And that is that he came to show us his ways. That we don't have to wonder about his ways. We don't have to doubt about the ways of Jesus. He came to show us the truth. And here is the truth. Jesus is king. Jesus is Lord. And that reality, that is the truth that all other truth must submit to. Everything else is meant to bow to that reality that Jesus is king, Jesus is Lord. Every bit of our lives need to be submitted to that truth. Verse 38, Pilate says to him, what is truth? And after he said this, he went back outside to the Jews and told them, I find no guilt in him. Isn't that interesting? Three times he's going to make that declaration that I don't find any guilt in him. We see that Pilate was wrestling because he did not want to have Jesus' blood on his hands. Three times he says, I don't find any guilt in him. But Pilate is beginning to wrestle with this spiritual issue. Could Jesus really be the Christ, the one spoken of as the Messiah? Jesus had just said that he had come into the world to bear witness to the truth. This was a direct claim of Jesus about his own divinity, that he was God. That he had not just been born into the world, but he came into the world. Means like he intended, there was intentionality about his coming. None of us were intentional about our coming into the earth, by the way, as a reminder. We did not plan this. It may be mommy and daddy's plan. They want our plan. But Jesus came with intentionality to bear truth. This claim about his divinity, along with this claim that the Jewish leaders had brought, that, hey, this guy says that he is a king. So Pilate is now having to wrestle with, am I actually dealing with the Son of God? And it seems this way because Pilate immediately begins to bargain with these religious leaders for Jesus' release. And we see a pattern here in these next verses. Pilate does three things that I believe that a lot of us in the world slip into as well. It's a pattern that happens when we're wrestling with the issue. Okay, is Jesus king? Is he Lord? I may say it with my mouth, but is it really all the way translated into my heart? And is it going to define the way that I live my life? See, Pilate had to confront what we have to confront. Jesus is either Lord of all, or he is not Lord at all. Come on, somebody. Pilate had to wrestle with this same thing that each one of us has to wrestle with. Jesus is either Lord of all, or he is not Lord at all. We cannot have it both ways. Pilate tried. Because here's the first thing that Pilate does after declaring that he finds no guilt in Jesus. He says to the Jews in verse 39, but you have a custom that I should release one man to you for the Passover. So do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews? And they cry out again, not this man, but Barabbas. Now Barabbas was a robber. See, the first thing that Pilate does after saying I can't find any guilt in him, the first thing that Pilate does is begin to barter. See, we do the same thing when we fail to recognize that the lordship of Jesus means that we have to surrender to him fully. Rather than wanting to surrender in obedience, we try to cut deals with the King of Kings. Well, God, you know that at work, I can't stop lying, because that's kind of like right at the nature of what I do at work. So I can't stop lying. So God, but you know that about my job. So God, here's what I'm going to do for you. And then you fill in the blank. Well, this year, I'm going to be more honest on my taxes, right? Or whatever, right? We begin to barter with God, try to cut deals with him. God, I can't give up my porn. God, you know how I'm wired. You made me. You know what I like. I can't give that up. So here's what I'm going to do for you. God, I'm going to show up at church on Sunday when I can. I'm going to do that, God. I'm going to do that. So it's cutting deals rather than just fully surrendering. God, you know I only have a small income. You know that I have very little money. God, I cannot be generous. You know that I cannot be generous with the little I have. So here's what I'm going to do for you, right? And we do that. We try to cut deals the very same way that Pilate did. Jesus, we find, he doesn't cut deals. He asks for unconditional terms of surrender. Our full lives. Everything about who and what we are. The second thing that Pilate does after bartering didn't work was to have Jesus beaten. And we begin in now in chapter 19, in verses 1 through 5, says, Then Pilate took Jesus and flogged him. And the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple robe. Purple was the color of royalty, and so they were mocking him, putting this crown on him, but a crown of thorns, and this purple robe. And they came up to him saying, "Hail, King of the Jews," and struck him with their hands. Pilate went out again and said to them, "See, I'm bringing it out to you, that you may know," second time, "I find no guilt in him." So Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." We do the very same thing when we're trying to appease someone, appease something. Instead of surrendering to Jesus as King. "God, I know this is wrong. I know this is wrong, but I'm doing it to appease my boss. I'm doing it to appease my girlfriend, my best friend that I don't want to lose. So I give in to doing things that I know are wrong." Listen, Pilate knew Jesus was not guilty. He knew what he was doing was wrong. But he had Jesus beaten anyway. And sometimes we're just trying to appease our own flesh, our own lusts. But whenever we give in, we're doing the same thing that Pilate did. We're beating Jesus. "I'm just trying to live my life here, God. You know this is hard. I can't be perfect. I would never kill you." Never do that. "I'm just going to let you take a beating." And so we give in. We try to appease these things. But you know what we find? Hell is never appeased. It's always hungry for more. We give an inch, hell always takes a mile. So we come to verse 6. "And when the chief priests and the officers saw Jesus there, crown of thorns, purple robe, bloodied, beaten, they cried out, 'Crucify him! Crucify him!' And Pilate said to them, 'Take him yourselves and crucify him.'" Third time, "I find no guilt in him." And so Pilate takes his third step. He barters, he beats Jesus, and now he fully betrays Jesus, giving Jesus into the hands of these religious leaders to kill him. He gave up even trying. Have you ever been there? Just fully giving up. "God, I'm just done. I've tried my best. I have done everything that I'm just giving up and I'm giving in." And that's the very thing that we see Pilate doing. He barters, has Jesus beaten, and now he fully betrays him. He fully gives up. for you and for me, it's actually a really good place to be, is to come to God and fully give up. Because just like Pilate, we can't hold Jesus out to be the King of Kings without surrendering our full lives to him. It's like we cannot have it both ways, church. And believe me, I'm not here to beat anybody up today. Because just like you, I struggle with these same things. Trying to bargain with God. Seeing Jesus take a beating because of my own heart, my own actions. We've got to come to that place, though, where we say, God, are you going to be the Lord of all of my life? Because we cannot have it both ways. Jesus actually talks about that through John in the book of Revelation. In Revelation 3, 15 and 16, Jesus is giving a word to a church and says, I know all the things you do, that you are neither hot nor cold. I wish you were one or the other, but since you are like lukewarm water, neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth. It's like, make a decision, people. We can't like come to this place on Sunday mornings and play church. Well, I guess we can actually, because there's a lot of people that do it. There's a lot of people that do play church. But that's not what I'm interested in. How about you? I don't want to be a church of players. I want to be a pastor of a church along with people who are learning to surrender their full and entire lives to him. The last part that we're going to read in this story that leads up to Jesus' crucifixion, verses 7 through 9, and the painful result that Pilate discovers is something I think that we discover in our own life when we do not fully surrender to the Lord as the King. All that Pilate is left with is fear, fear, and silence. The Jews answered him, "We have a law. And according to that law, he ought to die because he has made himself to be the Son of God." When Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. He was filled with fear because it's like, what have I done? He knew that he was dealing with God. So fear enters his soul that I have betrayed the very Son of God. So it says he enters his headquarters again and says to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. Fear and silence are the things that we're left with when we betray Jesus. When we do not surrender fully to his lordship. The fear of the consequence of our actions. The fear of hell. The fear of divine retribution that I cannot get away with what I've done to God. I knew what was right. He is true and there's no guilt in him, and yet I have tried to bargain, I've had him beaten, and I've fully betrayed him with my life, with my heart, with my actions. And so fear begins to consume Pilate. And then he turns back to Jesus, only to find Jesus, who was very conversant a few minutes ago, willing to engage, and what he's met with is silence from the Lord. Now, I think there's a lot of reasons that sometimes we don't feel that we are hearing directly from God. I, I love what someone recently told me about sometimes why we don't hear from God the way we want to. And they said that, hey, it's during the middle of a test that the teacher is silent. Oh, that's good, because I remember that at school. Teachers talk a whole lot, right? Talk, 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 talk. But then when it comes to test time, they're silent. I take comfort in that. That when I'm going through a time of testing, I may not hear from the Lord the same way that I would normally. But I think there's another reason that sometimes that we might be facing a silent heaven. And it was the same reason that Pilate did. And that's because Pilate knew that he was out of alignment with God. He knew that he was not surrendering to the lordship of Jesus, that he was going his own way, doing his own thing, making up stuff as he went outside of the lordship of Jesus. And it's the same for all of us. Fear and silence are what we're left with when we don't surrender our hearts to Jesus. But that's not what he has for us. That's not what he wants for you and for me. And it's not what I want for any of us either. The beautiful thing is that Jesus, because of his love for you and me, has made a way. He knows that we're all going to fail. He knows that, like Pilate, every single one of us at some point is going to betray him. And yet, he went to the cross for you and for me. It's what we celebrate this week, that even in the midst of our brokenness and betrayal, that he died for us. That while I was yet a sinner, that he loved me and died for me, that I might have restoration of relationship with him. But we all have to deal with the question, is he going to be Lord of all? Or is he not Lord at all in my life? It's not perfection that he seeks, because until we're with him one day in heaven, none of us is going to be perfect. But it's the direction of our heart that he seeks, surrendering to him fully. Saying, Jesus, I want you to be Lord over every part of my life, my work life, my home life, my sexual life, my financial life, my neighboring life, my church life. God, I don't want to be two-faced, and I don't want to be caught in this wrestling match of, like, I'm saying with my mouth that you're Lord, but I'm living a different way.